Miller again. Because she doesn't want to hook up again, I reply through clenched teeth. Impossible, everyone wants to hook up with you. I know, right? I lift the bottle to my lips. So, what should I do? Beau offers a shrug.
Get over it, go out with someone else.
I only pick up on the Wayne's World reference because Tucker and I literally watched it last weekend when it came on TV.
Nice. I grin at him and add, I don't even own a gun, let alone many guns that would necessitate an entire rack.
We both recite the next line.
What am I gonna do with a gun rack?
Our loser selves proceed to break out in laughter and high-five each other, and then Beau addresses the topic at hand.
Seriously, though,
he gestures around the bar.
This place is full of women who'd sell their firstborn to go home with you. Pick one and sex this other chick right out of your head.
My dick won't let me, I mutter. Beau snickers. Can you repeat that, please? My dick is being difficult, I explain irritably. I tried to jerk off to porn last night, and swear to God, damn thing wouldn't get hard. Then, I thought of this girl? I correct myself, because I promised Allie I wouldn't tell anyone about our night together. And bam, I snap my fingers, hard as a rock. Beau eyes me thoughtfully.
You know, I don't think we're dealing with a Bella's magical blood situation here.
No?
No, I think you've imprinted on this girl's pussy.
A choked cough sounds from behind me and I turn in time to see our waitress walking by. Her cheeks are red, lips twitching as if she's trying not to bust a gut. I turn back to Beau.
What do you mean? I mean you're facing a Jacob quandary. You imprinted on her pussy and now it's the only pussy you can think about. You exist solely for this pussy. Like Jacob and that weird mutant baby.
You fucking asshole. You've totally read those books.
Nuh-uh,
Beau protests. He gives a sheepish grin. I've seen the movies. I decide to save my taunting for later because there are more pressing matters to focus on.
So what's the cure, Dr. Maxwell? Go on a fuck spree and hope I unimprint? Or keep working the charm and hope I wear her down?
My buddy snorts loudly.
How would I know?
He raises his pint glass.
I'm drunk, dude. Nobody should ever listen to me when I'm drunk.
He drains his glass and signals the waitress for another.
Hell, nobody should listen to me when I'm sober.
Chapter 8. Dean. The second game of the season is an unmitigated disaster. No, scratch that, it's a goddamn bloodbath. Nobody says a word as we file into the locker room, the humiliation of the loss creeping behind us like a puddle of tar. We may as well have yanked our pants down, stuck our bare asses in the air, and cheerfully asked the other team for a spanking. We fucking handed them the win. No, we handed them a shutout. As I whip off my jersey, I mentally replay every second of the game. Every mistake we made out there tonight is burned into my mind like a cattle brand. Losing sucks. Losing at home sucks harder. Damn, there are going to be a lot of disappointed fans at Malone's tonight. I'm not looking forward to seeing them, and I know my teammates are equally upset. None more so than Hunter, who hurriedly strips out of his uniform as if it's covered with fire ants.
You got some nice shots on goal tonight, I tell him, and it's the truth.
Our scoreless game wasn't for lack of trying. We played hard. The other team just played harder.
Would have been nicer if one of them went in, he mutters.
I stifle a sigh.
Their goalie was on point tonight. Even G couldn't get one past him.
Garrett takes that moment to lumber up to his locker, and he's quick to reassure the frowning freshman.
Don't sweat it, kid. There's plenty more hockey to be played this season. We'll bounce back.
Yeah, sure. Hunter is unconvinced. We don't get the chance to offer more encouragement because Coach Jensen strides into the locker room, tailed by Frank O'Shea. Coach wastes no time delivering one of his brief post-game speeches. As usual, it sounds like he's talking in point form.
We lost. It feels shitty. Don't let it get to you. Just means we work harder during practice and bring it harder for the next game.
He nods at everyone, then stalks out the door. I'd think he was pissed at us, if not for the fact that his victory speeches more or less go the same way. We won, it feels great, don't let it get to your head, we work just as hard during practice and we win more games.
If any of our freshman players are expecting Coach to deliver epic motivational speeches a la Kurt Russell and Miracle, they're in for a grave disappointment. O'Shea lingers in the room. My shoulders instinctively tense when he trudges toward me, but he surprises me by saying,
"Good coverage in the defensive zone tonight. That was a solid block in the second."
"Thanks." I'm still suspicious of the unexpected compliment, but he's already moved on to praise Logan for successfully killing the power play in the third period. I toss my gear in one of the huge laundry bins, then head for the showers and wash the stench of failure off my body. I hate losing, but I don't allow myself more than 10 minutes to dwell on it. My father taught me that trick when I was 8 years old, after a particularly demoralizing loss on the lacrosse field.
"You have 10 minutes, he told me. 10 minutes to think about what you did wrong and how bad you feel right now. Are you ready?"
He'd actually clicked a button on his watch and timed me. And for those 10 minutes, I brooded and sulked and wallowed in humiliation. I remembered the errors I'd made on the field and corrected them in my head. I imagined punching every player on the opposing team square in the mouth. And then Dad told me my time was up.
"There, it's over now," he said. "Now you look forward and figure out how you're going to get better."
I fucking love my dad. By the time I'm out of the shower, the bitterness of tonight's loss has faded, tucked away in my internal filing cabinet in a folder labeled Shitty Stuff. I think Garrett uses the same filing system because he's damn near chipper as we meet up with Hannah in the parking lot. He pulls her into his arms and smacks a kiss on her lips.
"Hey, babe."
"Hey." She snuggles closer to him.
"It's getting so cold. I wouldn't be surprised if it started snowing right now."
She's not wrong. It's freezing out, and every breath we take floats out in an invisible white cloud.
"Bar or home?"
Logan asks, joining us at our cars.
"Bar,"
Garrett says.
"Don't feel like having anyone over tonight. You?"
After a game, we either hit Malone's or invite our teammates and friends over to the house. But it's obvious none of us feel like playing hosts tonight.
"Bar,"
Logan echoes, and I nod in agreement.
"Are we waiting for Tucker?"
I search the lot, but I don't see our roommate anywhere.
"And what about Grace?"
"Tuck already left with Fitzy," Logan answers. "And Grace isn't coming tonight, she's at the station." Feigning nonchalance, I glance at Hannah.
"What about your other half?"
"I'm right here,"
Garrett says smugly. "I mean her other half," I grin at Hannah.
"The little blonde drama queen you hang out with."
"She didn't feel like going out tonight. She's too busy moping."
"Moping about what?"
But I already know the answer to that. The ex-boyfriend, Obbs. Hannah confirms my thoughts. "Sean, he called her this morning and I don't know what he said to her, but she got really quiet afterwards and she's been mopey ever since. I would have stayed home tonight, but I didn't want to miss the game."
Garrett leans down to kiss her cold, reddened cheek.
"I'm glad you didn't. We appreciate your support, babe."
"I'm so bummed you guys lost," she says. But I'm more concerned about the idea of Allie sulking all alone in the dorm. She's probably ovaries deep in a carton of Ben and Jerry's right now while Mumford and Sons plays in the background.
"Are you sure you shouldn't go home and braid her hair or something?"
I ask Hannah.
"That's what chicks do for moral support, right?"
"Yes, Dean, that's exactly what we do. Hair braiding, followed by naked pillow fights, and then kissing practice."
"Can I come?"
Logan and I blurt out in unison. "You wish. And no, I'm not going home yet. I texted Allie during the third period, and she insists she's fine. She's drinking margaritas and watching this awful show. Like, I'm talking really awful. Wild horses couldn't drag me back there tonight."
"What show?"
Garrett asks curiously. "The worst thing to ever happen to television," is all she says, and everyone laughs. Logan taps the hood of my Beamer.
"Are we ready to go?"
I hesitate.
"Actually, do you mind riding with G and Wellesley? I need to make a few stops first. I'll meet you guys there."
"Sure," he says easily. He moves away from my car and toward Garrett's Jeep.
I slide into the driver's seat and start the engine, but I wait until the Jeep disappears from the lot before I pull out of my parking space. I have only one stop to make, and it's not one I want any of my friends knowing about.
Allie. When I hear the knock, my first thought is that Sean is at the door. Then I pray he isn't, because after the bizarre and upsetting conversation we had this morning, I'm not ready to see him. I forgive you. He'd blurted out those three words the second I answered the phone. I, in turn, had to fight from spitting out something nasty in response, because forgiveness implies that I'd done something wrong by sleeping with someone else, and that wasn't the case. I hadn't cheated on him. I hadn't lied to him. Sure, having sex with Dean so soon after my breakup with Sean isn't something I'm proud of, but I'm not the first girl to jump into rebound sex, and I certainly won't be the last. Still, despite the resentment his forgiveness had triggered, a part of me was relieved to hear it. God knows I've been feeling guilty about my night with Dean, so maybe absolution is exactly what I was seeking when I confessed my sin to Sean the other night. That doesn't mean I'm ready for a face-to-face with him, though. He'd asked if we could meet up for coffee, claiming he had more he needed to say but didn't want to do it over the phone. I told him I'd think about it. Now, as another knock pounds on the door, I really hope he didn't decide to force the issue. I brace myself for a confrontation and open the door, but it's not Sean, it's Dean.
Hey there, baby doll.
He flashes a grin and barrels his way inside.
Wellesley said you were sulking, so I stopped by to turn your frown upside down.
I'm not sulking, I grumble.
Even better. Saves me from having to do any work.
He unzips his jacket and tosses it on the arm of the couch. Then he strips off his sweater, leaving him in nothing but faded blue jeans. I stare at him in disbelief.
Did you really just take off your shirt?
Yeah, I don't like shirts.
He doesn't like shirts. This guy. God damn it, I don't even know what I think of him. He turns toward the sofa, and the way his tight butt moves beneath the snug denim reminds me of how firm it felt when I squeezed it. Then he lowers his long body on the sofa cushions, which causes the denim to stretch over his package. And now I'm reminded of the way my mouth had watered when Dean's cock was filling it.
Oh yeah, suck it, baby. Suck it like you own it.
The raspy command echoes in my mind. My lips start to tingle because, damn it, I had sucked it. I'd sucked it like it was a lollipop and an ice cream cone and every other delicious treat imaginable, all rolled up into one hard cock. Crap, I think I might be blushing, which is confirmed when Dean winks at me. Does he know I'm thinking about blowing him? What am I even saying? Of course he does. A guy like Dean probably assumes that everyone, at all times, is thinking about blowing him. He stretches one arm along the back of the couch and beckons me with the other.
You sitting, or what?
I'll stand, thanks.
Aw, come on, I don't bite.
Yes, you do. Those green eyes twinkle.
You're right, I do.
He looks way too comfortable sitting there on my couch. A blonde Adonis with his golden chest and sculpted muscles and perfectly chiseled face. If the hockey thing doesn't work out for him, he ought to consider going into modeling. Dean De Laurentiis oozes sexuality. He could slap his face on a laxative label and every woman in the world would be praying for constipation just to have an excuse to buy it.
Seriously, Alley Cat, sit down. You're starting to make me feel unwelcome.
You aren't welcome, I sputter. I was having a perfectly nice evening until you showed up. He looks hurt, but I don't know if it's genuine or if he's putting it on. I suspect it's the latter.
You really don't like me, huh?
Guilt pricks at me. Crap, maybe it is genuine.
It's not that. I do like you. But I wasn't kidding when I said I'm not into casual sex, okay? Every time I think about what we did this weekend, I feel...
horny,
he supplies. Yes. Slutty. I don't expect the flare of irritation I glimpse in his eyes.
You want some advice, babe? Erase that word from your vocabulary.
I suddenly feel guilty again, but I'm not sure why. Very reluctantly, I join him on the couch, making sure to keep some distance between us.
I mean it, he continues. Stop slut-shaming yourself. And fuck the word slut. People should be able to have sex whenever they want, however many times they want, with however many partners they choose, and not get some shitty label slapped on them.
He's right, but... the label is there whether we like it or not, I point out.
Yeah, and it was created by prudes and judgmental assholes and jealous pricks who wish they were getting laid on the regular, but aren't.
Dean shakes his head.
You need to stop thinking there's something wrong with what we did. We had fun. We were safe. We didn't hurt anyone. It's nobody's business what you or anyone else does in the privacy of their bedrooms, all right?
Oddly enough, his words succeed in easing some of the shame that's been trapped inside me since Friday night. But not all of it. I told Sean, I confess. Dean frowns. Not about you, I add hastily. I just told him I had sex with someone else.
Why the hell would you do that?
I don't know, I moan. I felt like I owed him the truth, but that's crazy, right? I mean, we're broken up. Another moan slips out, this one more anguished than the first. But we were together for so long. I'm so used to telling him everything. Dean absently rubs the cushion behind my head. The movement directs my gaze to his biceps, the delicious flex of muscle honed from years of physical activity.
Be honest, he finally says. Do you want to get back together with the guy?
I slowly shake my head.
You sure about that?
I'm sure. I think about the non-stop arguments Sean and I had since the summer, and I feel even more confident in my decision to end it. All those spiteful comments he'd hurled my way, mocking me about my dreams, giving me ultimatums for the future. Sean might have forgiven me for what I did after our breakup, but suddenly, I'm not sure I've forgiven him for what he did before it. We weren't right for each other anymore. I swallow the pain in my throat. If it was possible to stay in college forever, then yes, Sean and I would probably be together. But it's time to grow up, and we want completely different things for the future. Or at least, I think we do. This breakup is screwing with my head. I don't even know what to think anymore.
That's your problem. You think too much.
I can't help but laugh. Gee, is that your advice? Stop thinking?
Stop obsessing.
Dean shrugs.
You broke up with the guy for a reason. A damn good reason, if you ask me. And now you've got to follow through on it. Quit talking to him and quit second-guessing yourself.
You're right, I say grudgingly.
Of course I am. I'm always right.
With an arrogant smile, he moves closer and rests one big hand on my knee.
Okay, so here's our plan for tonight. First, we'll bone down to take the edge off. Then, we'll order a pizza and replenish our energy. And after that, round two. Sound good?
Exasperation rises inside me. Every time I think there's more to Dean than simply being a sex-obsessed horn dog, he goes and proves me wrong. Or actually, he proves me right. Have you considered seeing a psychiatrist about your delusions? I ask politely. Because, sweetie, there's no chance in hell of us boning tonight.
Fine. How about we go down on each other instead?
How about you leave?
Counteroffer. I stay, and we dry hump.
God, this guy is incorrigible. Counteroffer. You can stay, but you're not allowed to talk. He counters with,
I stay, I'm allowed to talk, but I won't hit on you.
I think it over. You stay, you can't hit on me, and you have to watch my show without a single complaint. A broad grin stretches across his face.
I accept your terms, madam.
9. Allie.
So, what are we watching?
Mr. I Don't Like Shirts glances at the television screen. It's paused to the opening credits of the episode I was about to play before Dean showed up. Solange, I answer. He wrinkles his nose.
What's Solange?
It's a French soap opera I'm watching, so I can learn to speak the language. Dean snickers.
You know there's a French department at this college, right? Classes you can take?
Yeah, where all you do is conjugate verbs and learn how to ask for directions and where the bathroom is. I'm all about immersion. If I hear people talking in French for long enough, I'll pick it up a lot faster. He raises his eyebrows.
How's it going so far?
Not great. He snickers again. But I'm only on season 1, I protest. I'm sure after a few more seasons I'll be fluent. Dean looks at the screen, then back at me. I can tell he's debating whether he made a grave error by coming over tonight. But he surprises me by saying,
All right, catch me up. What's this show about?
Are you being serious right now?
As a heart attack.
Really? I beam at him, because this is the first time anyone has offered to watch this show with me. My friends refused to. Though, to Hannah's credit, she did manage to sit through the pilot. Afterward, she informed me that she'd rather have crows peck at her eyes than watch the next episode. Honestly, I don't blame her. It's not a good show. I know this. But what started off as a language exercise ended with me getting totally hooked. It's like crack to me now. Okay, so, that's Solange. I press play, and a gorgeous redhead with massive boobs and a teeny waist appears on the screen.
Ah,
he says.
The titular character.
You only use that word because it has tit in it.
Ovs, tits are great.
I sigh. Anyway, Solange is dating Sebastian.
Sebastian, huh? That's my middle name.
He pauses.
Well, one of them.
He amends. My brow furrows. How many middle names do you have?
2. My full name's Dean Sebastian Kendrick Hayward De Laurentiis.
I shake my head in dismay. What is wrong with your parents? Why would they give you so many names? Did they want you to get made fun of in school? That makes him chuckle.
Trust me, it's nothing compared to some of the dudes at my prep school. This one guy I played lacrosse with had 6 middle names.
So you're saying it's a rich person thing? Cram as many unnecessary syllables on your kid's birth certificate?
Nah, it's usually done to acknowledge the grandparents or some other wealthy relative.
He shrugs.
Sebastian is my grandfather on my dad's side. Kendrick is on my mom's.
I guess that makes sense. But man, his full name is a total mouthful. As something catches my eye, I quickly point at the screen. See that guy lurking in the corner? The one with the mustache? That's Antoine. He's stalking Solange. Dean gives a mock gasp.
The plot thickens.
I gave him the finger. But in the last episode, we found out the reason he's stalking her, and it's not because he wants to jiggle down.
Jiggle down?
You know, fuck her.
Right.
His lips twitch like he's trying hard not to laugh.
So why is he creeping on her then?
Because her mother paid him to. I lower my voice, then feel like an idiot because it's not like Solange can fucking hear me. Ooh, and get this. Last episode, there was another huge twist. Solange's colleague from the modeling agency? Oh, there she is.
On the screen, a stunning blonde enters the restaurant and sashays her way to Solange's table. That's her mother, I inform Dean. Solange's mother is pretending to be her colleague. He frowns.
How does that work? They're the same age.
Nope, I say smugly. This is where the cosmetic company comes in. Dean looks utterly lost.
What cosmetic company?
Beauty Eternelle. I looked it up, and it stands for Eternal Beauty. Solange's family owns it. Oh, and her father and uncle are big-time plastic surgeons. Anyway, Solange thinks her mother ran off when she was a kid. Well, her mother did run off, actually. But after her dad died, Marie-Thérèse came back from the French Riviera and blackmailed the uncle into doing plastic surgery on her. So now she looks like a totally different person. Solange has no idea that she spent the last 6 months working with her mother.
Allie.
Dean leans forward and fixes me with an eerily somber stare.
This show is fucking stupid.
I know, I say sheepishly. But it's addictive. Trust me, one episode of this crap and you'll be hooked.
Sorry, baby doll, but I can pretty much guarantee that's not gonna happen.
Dean. It happened. God help me, I'm into this show. I came over tonight with the single-minded purpose of working the charm and convincing Allie to get naked with me again. Instead, I'm sipping on a margarita. I've just watched 2 hours worth of a French soap opera, and now I'm texting Logan to let him know I won't make it to Malone's. Because, God help me, I want to know what happens next. Marie-Thérèse and Antoine hooked up in the last episode, which ended with a crazed Marie-Thérèse holding a letter opener to his throat, when there was no previous indication that she had any sort of beef with Antoine. Or, hell, maybe there was and we just didn't pick up on it because we don't fucking speak French. I still don't get why she has a grudge against Solange, I admit, as Allie hovers over the coffee table to top off our margaritas. The wide neckline of her shirt shifts to one side, providing me with a view of one bare shoulder and the swell of her left boob. I'm about to comment on how the sexy view is much appreciated, then think better of it. I promised I wouldn't hit on her tonight, and if I break that promise, she might kick me out before I find out why Marie-Thérèse tried to kill Antoine. Allie flops down beside me, and I give myself a mental high five because she didn't leave a foot of distance between us this time. We're inches apart now, which tells me she's starting to warm up to me. I'm not sure either. I haven't figured out the whole backstory yet. I think it has something to do with Solange's father loving his daughter more than his wife. Allie muses. There were some flashbacks in the earlier episodes that heavily implied he wanted to jiggle down with his daughter. Kinky. She snickers. We go quiet as the next episode picks up exactly where it left off. Antoine manages to subdue Marie-Thérèse, and the two proceed to argue for 10 minutes. Don't ask me about what, because it's in French. But I do notice that the same word, héritier, keeps popping up over and over again during their fight. Okay, we need to look up that word, I say in aggravation. I think it's important. Allie grabs her cell phone and swipes her finger on the screen. I peek over her shoulder as she pulls up a translation app. How do you think you spell it? She asks. We get the spelling wrong 3 times before we finally land on a translation that makes sense. Heir. Oh, she exclaims. They're talking about the father's will. Shit, that's totally it. She's pissed off that Solange inherited all those shares of Beauté Eternelle. We high-five at having figured it out, and in the moment our palms meet, pure clarity slices into me, and I'm able to grasp precisely what my life has become. With a growl, I snatch the remote control and hit stop. Hey, it's not over yet, she objects. Allie, I draw a steady breath. We need to stop now, before my balls disappear altogether and my man card is revoked. One blonde eyebrow flicks up. Who has the power to revoke it? I don't know. The Man Council, the Stonemasons, Jason Statham, take your pick. So you're too much of a manly man to watch a French soap opera? Yes. I chug the rest of my margarita, but but the salty flavor is another reminder of how low I've sunk. Jesus Christ, and I'm drinking margaritas? You're bad for my rep, baby doll. I shoot her a warning look. Nobody can ever know about this. Ha, I'm going to post it all over the internet. Guess what, folks? Dean Sebastian Kendrick Hayward De Laurentiis is over at my place right now watching soaps and drinking girly drinks. She sticks her tongue out at me. You'll never get laid again. She's right about that. Can you at least add that the night ended with a blowjob? I grumble. Because then everyone will be like, oh, he suffered through all that so he could get his pole waxed. Your pole waxed? That's such a gross description. But her eyes are bright, and she's laughing as she says it. Christ, she's so pretty. And sexy, so goddamn sexy. I wonder why I never noticed it before. But I guess it's because every time I saw her prior to Friday night, she was glued to her boyfriend's side. The moment I think about Allie's ex, her phone buzzes. Speak of the devil. What does he want now? I have trouble hiding my irritation, but she's too distracted by the text message to notice. She tilts the screen toward me, and my annoyance grows. So can we meet up for coffee? It says. I really need to talk to you. Say no, I advise. Her teeth dig into her bottom lip. It's hard. You have no problem saying no to me. I didn't date you for 3 years, she points out. I gently take the phone from her hand and set it on the table. Okay, you ready for some real talk? She nods shakily. Sean is going to keep texting you. He's going to keep emailing and calling and doing everything in his power to win you back. You want to know why? Because you're smart and funny and smoking hot, and he knows he's a total idiot for letting you go. Surprise fills her eyes. He's going to keep at it, which means you need to learn to ignore it. I study her face. That is, if you're serious about moving on. She nods again, resolute this time. I am. Then move the fuck on, babe. You can't run to your friend's boyfriend's house or hide out in the dorm every night. Tell the guy you don't want to talk to him, and then go out and find yourself some distractions. I can help you if you want. Let me guess, she says dryly. You volunteer as sexual tribute? Nope. For once, I'm not talking about sex. What do you suggest, then? I grin. I think you need to live the life of Dean. Huh. Okay. So I should throw on some hockey pads, let a bunch of behemoths smash me into the boards every night, and reward myself with a never-ending string of casual sexual encounters? Got it. I lean in and tug a strand of her hair. Don't be an ass. My apologies, she smiles. Please, tell me more about the life of Dean. My hand travels across her smooth cheek to grasp her chin. Look at me, Alley Cat. Does it look like I have many problems? Are you ever going to find me moping in my room or stressing out about trivial bullshit? No, she says slowly. I'm an overall happy person, right? Her suspicious gaze locks with mine. Yes, but how is that even possible? Nobody is happy all the time. It's absolutely possible. I rub my thumb over her lower lip. Her lips are so fucking soft. I'm dying to kiss them again. You want to know my secret? Hmm? She sounds distracted. I stroke her lips again, and I'm gratified when her breath hitches. I do what I want, when I want it, and I don't give a shit what other people think about me. That gets her attention. Sounds nice, being able to do what you want all the time. Sadly, that's not how life works. You make life work for you, babe. My fingers travel down her slender throat, skimming over her pulse point. What do you want, Allie? Tell me one thing you've been dying to do but haven't gotten around to doing. Her forehead furrows as she thinks it over. Well, I've been wanting to start a new cleanse, but I keep putting it off. I have no idea what that means. I go on these juice cleanses a couple times a year, she explains. It sucks because you're stuck on a liquid diet for 2 whole weeks, but you feel so much better afterward. You're a fucking weirdo. Pick something else, something normal. She pauses, deep in thought again, and then her expression brightens. I've always wanted to learn how to salsa dance. Fuck, that's such a chick thing to say. Then do it, I tell her. She chews on her lip again.
I don't know. I mentioned it to Sean once, but he didn't want to take lessons with me, and I was too embarrassed to go alone. I looked into it and found out that if you show up alone, they pair you up with a random partner.
So what? It's an opportunity to make some new friends, I shrug. I think you should sign up.
Are you offering to take salsa dancing lessons with me?
Her expression is hopeful. I snort. No way. I only do what I want, remember? And I do not want to salsa dance. But I think you should.
Maybe I will,
she says thoughtfully. That's the spirit. I give her chin a teasing pinch. Stick with me, kid, and your entire life will change for the better. That's the De Laurentiis guarantee. Allie heaves out a sigh. What? I demand.
I can't decide if you're being sincere or if you're trying to get in my pants again.
I waggle my eyebrows. Who says it can't be both? When that gets me another sigh, my voice becomes gruff. I'm being sincere.
Wow, I think you actually mean that.
For some reason, her careful scrutiny has me shifting uneasily. I'm suddenly wholly aware of the fact that I'm not wearing a shirt. She is too, because those big blue eyes drift lower, focusing on my abs, before she wrenches her gaze away. The air between us seems to crackle. Allie's pupils are dilated, and there's no mistaking the rapid flutter of her pulse in the center of her throat. I know arousal when I see it. Little Dean knows it too, and he promptly thickens behind my zipper. Allie, my voice comes out hoarse. She's off the couch before I can blink.
And it's time for you to go.
She sounds overly cheerful, and I can tell she's struggling to control the same waves of desire that are practically swallowing me whole. When I remain seated, she frowns deeply.
Shirt up and go home, Dean.
Allie. Slowly I rise to my feet. My mouth is full of gravel as I say. I want... She whips up her hand.
Don't you dare finish that sentence. I mean it. It's time to go.
I want to ask her how long she's going to keep fighting this, but since I know it'll only piss her off further, I keep my mouth shut and do what the lady asked. I leave. On the drive home, I resign myself to another night of getting up close and personal with my right hand. Chapter 10. Dean. The next day, I have the misfortune of leaving the International Relations Lecture Hall at the same time as Sabrina. I tense up, waiting for the inevitable bitchy barb.
You looked a little lost in there, Richie. Was Professor Burke not speaking slowly enough for you?
Yep, there it is. I roll my eyes. Right, because I'm dumb. Good one. I don't bother asking her not to call me Richie. I can't stop her from doing it any more than I can stop Summer from ditching my old childhood nickname. Sabrina decided I was a stupid, spoiled Richie Rich type from the moment we met. Of course, that didn't stop her from banging me, now did it?
So which poor freshman will be writing your paper for you? She asks sweetly. You have a whole slew of them on speed dial, right? I assume one of them wrote the LSATs for you, too.
I halt at the top step of the front entrance. I tolerate her taunts because they're not worth defending myself against, but every now and then I have to draw the line. It just kills you that I scored 2 points higher than you, huh? When her nostrils flare, I know I've hit my mark. She recovers quickly.
Again, probably because you paid someone else to take the test for you.
Keep telling yourself that, sweetheart. Whatever helps you sleep at night, right? Sabrina tosses her long dark hair over her shoulder.
I sleep just fine, thank you. Knowing I've actually earned my grades leads to a very restful existence. You should try it sometime.
This time, she hits her mark. A frown tightens my mouth, but I don't take the bait because that's exactly what she wants me to do. She's been holding this bullshit over my head since sophomore year, and I'm damn tired of it. Enjoy the rest of your day, Sabrina. With a shrug of indifference, I make my way down the steps and wonder if she plans on keeping this feud going when we're at law school next year. I fucking hope not. The hostility she dishes out is getting old, not to mention annoying. Speaking of annoying, I'm supposed to be at Hastings Elementary in 20 minutes for my first practice with the Rugrat team. Go Hurricanes. As I make the 10-minute drive into town, I curse O'Shea for forcing this volunteer gig on me and ponder the authenticity of voodoo dolls. Eventually, I decide it doesn't matter if they're real or not. It'd still be fun to poke needles into a teeny doll version of Frank O'Shea. Once it starts falling apart from all the holes, I can use the head as a stress ball. At a red light, I shoot a quick text to my teammate Fitzy. Hey, do you know how to make a voodoo doll? His response doesn't come until I reach the small arena across the street from the school. Him. I'd think you were fucking with me, but the question is stupid enough to feel legit. No idea how to make V-doll. Can probably use any old doll? Challenge will be finding a voodoo witch to link to your target. Me. That makes sense. Him. Does it? Me. Voodoo implies magic, hexes, etc. I don't think any doll would work. Otherwise, every doll is a V-doll, right? Him. Right. Me. Anyway, thanks. Thought you might know. Him. Why the fuck would I know? Me. You're into all those fantasy roleplay games. You know magic. Him. I'm not Harry Potter, FFS. Me. HP is a nerd. You're a nerd. Ergo, you're a boy wizard. He sends a middle finger emoji, then says, B-Day beers at Malone's tonight. You still down? Me. Yep. Him. See you later. I tuck my phone in my jacket pocket and hop out of the car. At least I have something to look forward to after this. Celebratory beers for Fitzy's 21st birthday will be my reward for spending the afternoon coaching children against my will. The rink is empty when I stride in through the double doors. The cold air greets me like an old friend, and I breathe it in. Shifting my duffel to my other shoulder and making my way to the home team bench, where a tall man in a red sweater and scuffed black hockey skates is peering at a clipboard. The whistle around his neck tells me he's the coach of the Hurricanes.
De Laurentiis?
When I nod, he extends a hand.
Doug Ellis, nice to meet you, kid. I watched your Frozen Four game on TV in April. You played well.
Thanks. I gesture to the deserted ice. I'm 10 minutes early, just like O'Shea ordered me to be. Where are the kids?
Locker room. They should be out soon.
He sets the clipboard on the ledge that spans the bench.
Chad, fill you in on what's expected of you?
Nope.
Despite what O'Shea told me, I don't think Coach Jensen has any idea I've been recruited to work with the Hurricanes.
Well, it's not that complicated. We start each practice with 30 minutes of drills, then do a 30-minute scrimmage, split up into 3 10-minute periods. The boys work their asses off. Good kids. A lot of them. Talented, smart, eager to sharpen their skills and get better.
That's good to hear.
They loved Kayla.
At my blank expression, he says,
Your predecessor?
Right, the chick who'd come down with mono.
Anyway, she worked mostly with the offense. Did a terrific job, but I'll be honest, I'm glad to have a D-man on board. A few of the boys have trouble manning the defensive zone. I'd like for you to work closely with them.
We chat for a few minutes about my duties, and then he delivers a few warnings about not dropping F-bombs around the kids and not manhandling them in any way.
Got it. Keep it PG and don't touch him. Anything else? I ask. Nah, you'll figure out the rest as you go along.
All in all, Ellis seems like a decent man. And when the kids thunder out of the locker room and greet him like he's Jesus Christ brought back to life, my opinion of him climbs higher. He told me he's the school gym teacher, but that even if he lost his job, he'd never walk away from this team. Or the 8th grade girls volleyball team, which he apparently also coaches. I drop onto the bench and quickly kick off my Timberlands, replacing them with the Bowers I stowed in my duffel. Then I hop the ledge and skate toward Ellis and the kids. Half of them are wearing red practice jerseys, the other half are in black. Ellis introduces me to the team, who ooh and ah when he informs them of my multiple Frozen Four wins. By the time we set up the first skating drill, every kid on the ice is begging for one-on-one attention from me. I'm not gonna lie, I have a blast from the word go. The boys' passion for the game reminds me of when I was a kid, how excited I was to put on a pair of skates and tear down the ice. Their enthusiasm is downright contagious. When Ellis blows his whistle to signal it's time for the scrimmage, I find I'm genuinely disappointed that the drills are over. I'd been giving tips to a 7th grader named Robbie during the last shooting drill, and the wrist shot he'd floated past the goalie had been a beauty. I want to see him do it again. But now it's time for the boys to take the skills they just learned and apply them to the scrimmage. Ellis and I serve as both refs and coaches, calling out penalties and offering advice when needed. The 30-minute game ends way too fast for my liking. I could stay out there forever. But Ellis signals the end of the scrimmage and gestures for everyone to skate forward. There's a strange clench in my chest as he addresses each boy, one at a time, to tell them one thing they did right at practice today. Face after face lights up at his compliments, and by the time Ellis is done, I think I might be in love with him. Damn, he's a great coach. After that, we follow the kids to the locker room and help them put away their equipment in the proper cubbies. They're a loud, boisterous group, laughing and joking and chirping each other as they change into their street clothes. The hallway outside the door is littered with vending machines and parents waiting for their sons. Robbie, however, stays behind. He's changed out of his practice uniform, but I'm troubled to see him lacing up his skates again and tucking the bottoms of his jeans into them. What you doing, kid? He looks surprised to find me standing there. Oh, he flushes. I get an extra 30 minutes to skate. A defensive note creeps in. Coach knows. Since I know better than to take a 13-year-old's word at face value, I duck out to track down Ellis, who's in the equipment room securing sticks on the long rack against the wall. What's this about Robbie staying behind to skate? Ellis glances toward the doorway. Oh, yes, it's fine. I'm headed out there in a sec to supervise him. Tell him not to step on the ice until I get there. I can't hide my frown. Why does he get extra ice time? His mother doesn't get off work until 4:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the family lives in Munson, so the school bus isn't an option. Ellis makes an annoyed sound. Some bullshit about town boundaries and the Hastings buses being unable to service other townships. Robbie's mother managed to get him enrolled here because he's an asset to our hockey program, but apparently the school district doesn't think it's important to provide safe transportation home to the kids who live out of the district. So Robbie hangs around the arena until his mom shows up? Ellis nods. I arranged it with Julie at the start of the season. I stick around after practice, watch him and his sister until she gets here. Did I mention how much I love this man? I'll stick around too, I offer. I was teaching Robbie the art of wrist shots before the drill ended. Wouldn't mind finishing up the lesson. His expression is a combination of surprise and respect. I bet he'd love that. Thanks, kid. When I re-enter the rink, Robbie is skating lazy circles along the boards. His dirty blonde hair ruffles behind him, and I decide he might need a lesson about hair, too. As in, trim the shit out of it before it reaches mullet status, or wave goodbye to any chance of getting laid. I'm walking down the concrete aisle when a high-pitched voice startles me to a stop. Who are you? I turn to see a tiny elfin creature sitting at the halfway point in the bleachers. Well, it's a girl, but holy hell, she might as well be a character from a Pixar movie. Huge blue eyes take up her entire face. Her hair is so fair it's nearly white, and her mouth is a tiny pink rosebud. Who are you? I call back, one eyebrow arched. I asked you first. Fighting a smile, I climb the steps until I reach her row. A glance at the rink reveals that Robbie is having fun skating aimlessly. Ellis is at the boards keeping an eye on him, so I plop down in the seat next to the cartoon elf and say, I'm Dean, the new assistant coach of the Hurricanes. Those big blue eyes study my face as if she's trying to decide if I'm lying. I'm Dakota, she finally says. She points a skinny finger at the ice. That's my brother. Ah, you're Robbie's little sister. Who says I'm the little one? She challenges. Maybe I'm his big sister. Kid, I'd be surprised if you're not still in diapers. I do not wear diapers. Her cheeks redden. I'm 10, she says haughtily. I gasp. Holy sugar, you're probably an old lady then. That makes her giggle. I am not. How old are you? 22. Her jaw falls open. That's old. I know, right? I should probably start planning my funeral. Who do you think I should leave my fortune to in my will? The chick from Hunger Games or the one from Divergent? They're not real people, she says frankly. I feign innocence. Are you sure? I swear I saw Katniss walking down the street the other day. You're lying. Yep, you caught me. I gesture to the pink spiral notebook in her lap. What you doing? Her bottom lip sticks out. Homework. Mrs. Klein said to write a whole page about what I'm thankful for on this Thanksgiving.
Mrs. Klein sounds like a monster.
Dakota giggles. No, she's okay. She ordered pizza for the whole class one time. It was after we got the highest scores on the literary test.
Literacy, I correct.
She waves her hand. Whatever. A grin springs free.
All right, let's stop wasting time.
I flip her little notebook to a fresh page. It's time to figure out what you're thankful for. Pleasure lights up her face.
You're going to help me with my homework?
Sure, why not? We've got 20 more minutes to kill until your mom gets here. What else are we going to do?
Allie. I'm in the passenger seat of Megan's car when Dean texts me. I'm not surprised to see his name on my phone. I've been expecting another "I want to fuck you" from him all day, so it was only a matter of time before it happened. But tonight, he throws me a curveball. Him. A bunch of us are at Malone's tonight for Fitzy's B-Day. Join us if you feel like it. Megan glances over from the driver's side. Who's texting you? And please, don't say Sean. No, it's not Sean. It's one of Garrett's friends, I answer vaguely. A bunch of the hockey guys are at Malone's for someone's birthday. He says we're welcome to join them. Is Hannah there? I shake my head. She's at rehearsal tonight. Like me, Hannah is also busy preparing for one of her final projects. As a music major, she's required to perform an original song for the department's winter showcase. I guess Megan doesn't think it's odd that I'm getting invited to hockey gatherings without Hannah because she doesn't comment on it. Instead, she says, "Let's do it." Are you serious? After more than 30 minutes debating a dozen options for our girls' night out, we finally decided to grab a late bite at the diner in Hastings. Malone's is the only bar in town, so obviously that suggestion had come up early in the conversation, but Meg had been the one to veto it. I thought you didn't want to deal with the whole bar scene tonight. She pushes her red bangs out of her eyes. Changed my mind. I think I'm in the mood to be surrounded by cute boys. Really? I say in surprise. What about the new boyfriend? Is there trouble in paradise already? Megan has been so cagey about this new guy she's dating, but I assumed they were doing okay. Normally, she's a huge chatterbox when it comes to her love life, but not this time. All I know about him is that he lives in Boston and she only sees him on the weekends. No, we're fine. She pauses. Well, not really. Another pause. It's complicated. You know, if you actually told me something about him instead of being Ms. Secretive, I might be able to offer some advice. Her green eyes stay focused on the road. Even if she wasn't driving, I know she'd still be avoiding my gaze. Okay, spill. What's wrong with him? Nothing's wrong with him. Bullshit. There has to be, otherwise you wouldn't be hiding him from all of us. So, what is it? Does he like to set barns on fire in his spare time? Does he kill squirrels and make little hats out of their fur? Does he have a weird mole that takes up his whole face? Does he... 37, she interrupts. He's 37. My eyebrows shoot up. Oh, wow, that's... old, I want to say, but I've always believed in the age is nothing but a number philosophy. Or at least I want to be that open-minded. I mean, I think it's hella creepy when a 60-year-old man dates an 18-year-old girl. But 37 isn't exactly geezer status. It's only 15 years older than me and Meg. See? This is why I didn't tell you guys! Accusation colors her tone. I knew you'd be all judgy. I hold up both hands in surrender. I'm not judging. You surprised me, that's all. Her pretty features relax. Tell me more about Mr. 37, I urge. I promise there's no judgment on my end. She grudgingly provides a few more details. His name's Trevor. He's a pediatric surgeon at Boston General. Okay, I'm impressed. He's divorced, and he has a 5-year-old daughter. Not so impressed anymore. And you're cool with that? I ask carefully. You're only 22, hun. Are you ready to be someone's stepmother? That's the problem, she moans. I wasn't even thinking that far ahead. Trevor and I met online. We were chatting all through September, but we didn't meet in person until a month ago. He's sweet, smart, gorgeous, easy to talk to. But we're still in the early stages of the relationship, you know? More casual than serious. She taps her polished nails against the steering wheel. When I saw him last weekend, he said he wants me to meet his daughter. Eek. Eek, I say out loud. I know, right? So now I'm second-guessing the whole relationship. Meeting his kid is a huge deal. What if she hates me? Or worse, what if she loves me and then me and her dad break up and this poor kid ends up traumatized? She won't fall in love with you after one meeting, I assure her. But I agree, this is a huge deal. Meg stops her little red Toyota at the intersection one block from Hastings' main stretch. I don't know. I told him I'd let him know on Friday when I see him, but I'm super confused. I have no idea what to do. She goes quiet for a second, then lets out a heavy breath. If we go to Malone's, can you DD on the way home? I might want something stronger than soda. No prob. I wasn't planning on drinking tonight anyway. I have rehearsal at 7 a.m., and a pounding hangover will make it hard for me to cry on command. In the opening scene alone, my character wails like a newborn 3 times. Should we go to another bar, though? I ask hopefully. Maybe the one in Munson? Why would we do that? I shrug. The hockey crowd can get kinda rowdy. I could use a little rowdy, she admits. Trevor is great, but he's not so much into partying anymore. He's in bed by 10 o'clock every night, even on weekends. Her bottom lip sticks out. Maybe that's another reason I should end it, huh? Look, I'd never dream of telling you what to do, I say gently. And I'm not saying you should break up with someone just because their party days are behind them. But you're in your senior year of college, hon. You shouldn't be going to bed at 10 if you don't want to. You should enjoy this last year of freedom in this weird place where you're an adult, but not an adult. Know what I mean? Save the early bedtimes for next year when you become a card-carrying member of the real world. A pensive look crosses her expression. I can tell she's absorbing the advice, and I hope she reaches a decision that makes her happy. God knows I've been dealing with tough decisions lately, too. Breaking up with Sean, figuring out where I want to take my acting career, walking into a bar to willingly spend time with the guy I had a one-night stand with. Shit, what am I doing coming to the bar? Nothing good can be gained from seeing Dean tonight. Worst case, he'll accidentally let something slip, and everyone will know that we hooked up. Best case, he'll flirt shamelessly with me and just be plain annoying. Since Malone's is the only alcohol game in town, it's the go-to place for both locals and Briar students every day of the week. If you show up after 9, you're looking at standing room only. Meg and I waltz in at 10:30, and it's like stepping into a sauna crammed with hundreds of sweaty bodies. The main room is jam-packed. I can barely see the counter because too many bodies are swarming in front of it, and the row of booths in the raised sections on either side of the main area are all occupied. I want to order a drink, Megan shouts over the music. Some rock song I don't recognize is blasting from the speakers. If Garrett Graham were here, he could probably tell me the name of the song, who's singing it, and what year it was released. Hannah's boyfriend has a hard-on for classic rock. I wouldn't be surprised to find out he makes Hannah play Lynyrd Skynyrd role-playing games in bed. We're about to head for the bar when a familiar voice rises above the music. Alley Cat, over here! I shift my head to see Dean waving at me from a large booth to my right. I don't know how he spotted me in the throng of people. I hadn't even texted him to say I was coming,
So he's either got exceptional spidey senses, or he's been monitoring the door like a creeper. Megan and I link arms to avoid getting separated and make our way through the sea of bodies. I inhale a gust of perfume from a platinum blonde in a short skirt. I manage to survive the perfume assault, only to breathe in a cloud of something more potent from the guy beside her. My eyes start to water, and I almost turn around to tell him to go easy on the Axe body spray before he kills someone.
"Look, Fitzy, girls,"
Dean announces when Megan and I reach the booth. He rapidly addresses the other guys.
"Quick, make room before they disappear."
Laughter breaks out, and I notice most of the players are grinning at one guy in particular, who I've seen before at some of the hockey parties Hannah dragged me to. I think his name is Colin, but I usually hear him being referred to as either Fitz or Fitzy. He's a big guy with messy brown hair, dark scruff on his face, and what looks like a tattoo peeking from the collar of his shirt. I suspect he's definitely rocking a chest tat, because I've seen him in a t-shirt, and I remember him having full sleeves on both arms. The boys shuffle around to accommodate us. Megan slides in next to a guy with a buzz cut. He introduces himself as Hollis. I squeeze in between Tucker, who's engrossed on his phone, and Pierre, one of the French Canadians on the team. He greets me with a smile, and a pair of adorable dimples pop out. Rounding out the group are two players I've never met. In his heavy accent, Pierre introduces them as Wilkes and Ekberg. Dean, who is across from me on the other side of Hollis, winks when our eyes lock.
"You made it. Didn't think you would."
"We were in the neighborhood," I say lightly.
"Glad you were, because this was becoming a total sausage fest. Seriously, the birthday boy didn't invite a single chick tonight."
"Fitzy is allergic to women," Hollis says helpfully. The birthday boy, or man, rather, because there's nothing boyish about this guy, rolls his eyes.
"I didn't realize that wanting to celebrate my birthday with the guys was such a crime. Did you even stop to consider the implications?"
Dean shoots back.
"What about the time-honored birthday blowjob? Did you think of that? Or do you expect one of us to do it?"
"I'm sure Pierre's down," Hollis pipes up. When the French Canadian gives him the finger, he smiles sweetly. "What? I thought that's what you guys did up in Quebec, no? Blow your buddies while whispering sweet French nothings to them?" Pierre snorts.
"You're from San Francisco. I'm pretty sure that's the blow your buddies capital of the world."
A round of smack talk ensues, which is cut short when a frazzled waitress appears to serve Megan and me. Meg orders a vodka cranberry. I ask for a glass of water.
"Water?"
Dean mocks after the waitress dashes off.
"You sure you don't want anything else, baby doll? Maybe, how about tequila? I always pegged you for a tequila girl."
I narrow my eyes at him. Fortunately, nobody else puts much stock in the comment. Why would they? It's not like any of them know that tequila is the reason I wound up in bed with Dean. The only person who knows is Dean, who promised to keep his mouth shut about it. But the teeny smirk on his face is making me antsy. Why do I get the feeling he's about to spill the beans? 11. Allie. I'm still glaring at Dean when my phone vibrates in my purse. I absently fish it out, and my breath catches when I see the message. Him.
"Remember when I took that tequila shot off your tits?"
I look up to find Dean blinking innocently at me, but I can see his arm moving under the table. Sure enough, a follow-up message appears.
"When I poured it all over your nipples and licked up every drop. Getting hard just thinking about it."
Ugh, I can't believe he's sexting me in the bar during his friend's birthday hang. I grit my teeth and text him back. Me. "Cherish the memory, sweetie, 'cause it's never happening again." Him.
"You saying you didn't like it when I was sucking on those sexy nipples?"
The nipples in question tighten into hard peaks. I know the padding of my bra hides the traitorous response, but the way Dean's smug gaze drops to my breasts tells me he knows. I draw a breath and answer, "Meh, it was all right." His smile widens. "Nah," he says in response to something Wilkes just asked. "I'm not worried. Yale's goalie has nothing against G's slapshot." I guess they're talking about their game against Yale on Saturday, but I'm too busy watching the subtle movement of Dean's arm. He's typing something else. Him.
I see. What about when I licked your pussy? Just all right, too?
I ignore the sharp clench between my legs and scowl at him. "Allie," Meg says in exasperation. "Sorry, what? I was asking about your play. Rehearsals started this week, didn't they? How's it going?" "Pretty good," I answer in an absent tone. I can't tell if Dean is typing something else. I hope not. "The guy who's playing my dead husband is fun to work with. How's yours going?" "Shitty." "Aw, I'm sorry, hun." I know Meg isn't happy with the playwright she's been paired with, and I don't blame her because he happens to be the most pompous asshole in the drama department. Everything he writes is pretentious and brimming with over-the-top angst. He thinks he's the reincarnation of Arthur Miller. Slade likes to rewrite entire scenes during rehearsal. She puts quotation marks around his name, which makes Fitzy chuckle.
"I don't think you know how to use air quotes," he informs her.
"No, I do. Slade isn't his real name. It's actually Joshua Sandusky," she snorts derisively. "This ass is so full of himself, I'm surprised he doesn't poop out little brown replicas of his smug face." The guys hoot at the disgusting image she's painted. First day of classes, we all had to sit around in a circle and introduce ourselves to our fellow actors. She glances at me. "Remember that?" "Oh, I remember," I say dryly. "Anyway," she tells Fitzy, "this jerk stands up and says, 'I'm Joshua Sandusky, but I go by Slade. Refer to me as anything else and I will not respond.'" And he wasn't kidding. Anytime the teacher slipped up and called him Sandusky, he would flat out ignore her.
"That's the douchiest thing I've ever heard," Dean remarks.
Shit, his arm is moving again. "I think it's ballsy," Hollis disagrees. "You know what? Fuck it. I'm pulling a Slade and giving myself a solo name. From now on, you guys can only refer to me as Thunder." I discreetly peek at the latest message and my breath hitches. Him.
"My dick is so hard right now. I'm dying to be inside you."
I don't indulge him this time. If I don't respond, he'll eventually stop, right? Wrong. The messages keep popping up, each one filthier than the last.
"Gonna take it slow next time. Savor every single second. So fucking slow, baby. Just slide in and out of your tight pussy until you're begging for more."
I grab my glass and choke down some water. I'm aware of Dean's soft chuckle, audible even with the music blasting in the bar.
"I won't give you what you want, though. I'll keep feeding you my cock, inch by inch, and then I'll take it away again. Every time you beg me to pound into you, I'll go even slower. Gonna torment that sweet pussy all night, baby. All fucking night."
I shoot to my feet like someone lit a fire under my ass. "I need to use the ladies' room," I blurt out, ignoring the broad grin stretching Dean's infuriatingly sexy mouth. I dart away from the booth as fast as my high-heeled boots can carry me. Fuckity fuck. I'm so turned on, my thighs are actually sticking together, and I'm worried there might be a wet spot on the back of my jeans. To make matters worse, Megan hadn't even made a dent in her drink, which means we won't be leaving anytime soon. Which means I need to collect my composure and extinguish every spark of desire that's burning like jet fuel through my blood. I hope to God that Dean quits sexting me when I get back. If he doesn't, there's a good chance I might orgasm at the table.
He keeps sexting. I keep ignoring him. Our battle of wills lasts for more than an hour, and I can't say I'm not impressed by his persistence. Not to mention the sheer amount of dirty words he has in his vocabulary. When I notice Dean visibly squirming on his side of the booth, I flash him a cheeky grin and finally text him back. Me. You're just torturing yourself, honey pie. Better stop before the blue balls set in. I punctuate that with two emojis that seem fitting for the situation. A pair of blue circles. Dean sighs and rises to his feet, but not before he does some strategic rearranging down below. I think I'm the only one who sees him do it, and my smile grows impossibly wider.
I'm going to change up these tunes, he tells the group. Whoever keeps putting on Aerosmith rock ballads is bumming the hell out of me.
As he walks off, my eyes betray me by honing in on his backside. His black pants hug his taut buttocks like a glove, which makes me wonder, are cargo pants usually that tight? I didn't think they were. Maybe Dean has a tailor on retainer who makes him special cargo pants that show off his ass? That seems like something he would do, vain bastard that he is. Either way, his ass is yummy. Damn it, everything about him is yummy. I can't help but admire the way his broad shoulders fill out his long-sleeve Under Armour shirt, or how his blonde hair is the perfect amount of tousled. Then I lose him in the crowd, and I feel a flicker of relief because now that he's out of sight, I have some time to get my raging hormones under control. The respite is brief, though. When he returns to the booth, he's still as gorgeous as ever, and I'm still a horny bundle of nerves. He resettles in his seat just as the current song ends and the opening strains of Dean's selection blare out of the speakers. It's Cheap Tricks, I Want You to Want Me. I can't stop a burst of laughter, which earns me a strange look from Fitzy.
Did I miss the punchline?
He asks. Nope, sometimes I just laugh for no reason, I say flippantly. I'm weird like that. Megan pipes up. It's true, she is. I swallow another laugh and avoid Dean's eyes as his song continues to play. I'm not surprised when my phone vibrates. Him.
I could have gone with something a little more subtle, but why play games? I'm goddamn aching for you, Allie.
Shit, he called me Allie. He means business. I lift my head, and the intensity burning in his gaze makes my heart stutter, then propels it into a hard gallop. Dean is already insanely attractive to begin with, but when he's turned on, he's absolutely spectacular. With his smoky green eyes at half-mast, lips parted slightly, strong throat working as he swallows, I can almost believe he is aching. That he's truly in physical pain from wanting me so bad. But this is Dean, for crying out loud. He probably springs a boner if a light breeze floats over his crotch. Seriously, just bump into him and you get him hard. The guy is obsessed with sex, and half the girls at this school can attest to that, because half the girls at this school have slept with him. Sure, it's flattering to be on the receiving end of all that heady sexual energy. What woman doesn't like feeling desirable? But I'd be an idiot if I believed even for a second that I'm the only woman Dean De Laurentiis is flashing those bedroom eyes at. Nope. I'm nothing more than another notch on Dean's exorbitantly long belt. The reminder spurs me to my feet. I'm really not feeling Cheap Trick tonight, I say sweetly. Think I'll switch it up again. My purposeful stride takes me to the jukebox across the room. It's not one of those old-school ones, but a modern jukebox with a touchscreen and slots for both cash and credit. I feed a dollar bill into the machine and study my options. Jeez, nearly every song that's ever been written is available on this thing. I grin when one artist in particular jumps out at me. I scroll through her discography. Select the title I'm searching for, and add it to the queue.
The sidebar on the screen reveals there's one other song ahead of mine, a Kesha track that sends a horde of college-age patrons to the dance floor. Which really just means they start dancing wherever they're standing, because the area in front of the karaoke stage that usually serves as the dance floor has been taken over by a cluster of hipsters who are all engrossed by their cell phones. Nice pick, Tucker calls out to me. He's been phone-obsessed tonight, too, so I'm surprised that he's suddenly being social. Not mine, I call back.
What'd you choose, then?
Dean asks suspiciously. You'll find out soon enough, my pretty. 3 minutes later, the intro comes on, and a chorus of female whoops ring out through the bar. Dean glares at me. My song choice? Pink's You and Your Hand. Hell yeah! Megan slams her glass down and hops to her feet, sticking out her hand to me. We're dancing! I don't have time to object because she's already dragging me into the crowd. Well then, guess we're dancing. As the bass line thuds beneath our heels, we throw our arms up in the air, shimmy our hips, and rock the fuck out. Meg's red hair whips past my face as she spins around. I do a spin too, because it gives me the opportunity to sneak a peek at Dean. He wears a resigned look, but there's also a flicker of amusement there. When we get to the part of the song where Pink, who is a goddess, by the way, a goddess, says bye-bye to the creep she's singing to, I shoot Dean a saccharine smile and flutter my fingers in his direction. The tip of his tongue touches his bottom lip as a slow grin curves his mouth. He gives a little wave in response.
Well played.
I can practically hear him drawling. Meg and I keep dancing, and our twosome draws more and more attention, and more participants. Suddenly, we're surrounded by other girls who are digging the song as hard as we are. It's pretty much an anthem for any woman who's ever had to deal with a slimy jerk hitting on her at a bar, or plying her with drinks in the hopes of getting laid, or just annoying her when she's trying to hang with her gal pals. A tiny Asian girl with multiple facial piercings and spiky pink hair bumps her hips to mine, and then we're dancing back to back, smacking our butts together as we share a moment of female camaraderie. I'm laughing and breathless from how much fun I'm having. And this time, when I seek Dean out, he doesn't look amused anymore. Oh, crap. He's aroused again. His sultry eyes track every move I make. By the time the song ends, I'm burning up. Not from sweat or exertion, but from Dean's gaze raking over me like flames licking through a hayfield. Once Meg and I return to the booth, I chug the rest of my water, then lift my hair up to fan my hot neck with one hand,